The time of that race, the par. Got it. All right. Could be decisive. You all have it. Just holler it out. We'll go to lunch. The 1 mile par for, I'm sorry, I skipped one. Non-winners won females at 7 furlongs. I heard 103. It's 44-4, 122-3. It's 103. So if you have a bunch of maiden fillies that just ran 123, you don't like the winner in an hour, winner's a one. Right? Because she's going to have to beat or record a par generally of 122-3 to win that next race. That's the way you apply it. The 1 mile par for three-year-old fillies at $40,000 claiming. I heard 98. 102. I heard 98, I heard 102. Work through it for a minute. We'll put it up on the board now. The $40,000 older claiming par. 107, right? This is a, so now the first adjustment is for females, right? So what's the female adjustment in claiming? 103 now, right? That's 4. Now what's the 3-year-old? All right. 98. Okay, now think about this for a minute. We were talking about how inflated the 3-year-old prices were. This is an older 3-year-old, an older female at that level. This is the 3-year-old at that level right now in May. Consider how inflated the 3-year-old prices are. They protect these horses so that they're not taken away prematurely. I mean, they still have room to develop so they can protect in claiming prices. Now, here's kind of a key all year long, especially early in the year. Here is, now that we're working with the chart, non-winners one is a 105, right? 105. $32,000 claiming is 105. $32,000 three-year-old claiming is what? It's 102 now. It was 101 back in March, and it was 100 at the beginning of the year when they first became three-year-olds. Now, consider this as you go through the year. People make this mistake all year long. They see a horse win a $32,000 claiming race for three-year-olds. They move into a non-winners of one, and they assume that this is the move that's being made. It's not. This is the move that they're attempting to make. And until later in the year, when the three-year-olds have grown and matured, this move is extremely difficult to make. Extremely. This move is shooting fish in a barrel for most of these horses. The horse has been mixing it up in here with kind of medium-type results and moves into this race. It's a serious class draw. So keep that in mind. It would. They do. Yeah, they do. And the reason they do is that they can't beat the allowance horses. They're running fourth and fifth every time. You don't continue to, unless you're Brian Sweeney, you don't continue to bat their heads against the wall. You drop them into a race like that, and then they win. There are some trainers out there that will just do that forever until the horse finally just gives up and gives up its heart. That's just a mistake. But this move is very difficult. It's easier now, and this represents it now. In January, here's what this move looks like. Consider how difficult it is for a horse to move out of a maiden, out of a $32,000 claiming race into a non-winners of one at that time of year. What?
Maybe a tape, could you be a little more specific than this move and this move and that move? Yes. It's going to be real confusing.
It really will. I was
kind of hoping you'd do a little work here and to earn your share of whatever you're going to make on that. I'll rephrase that for purposes of the tape. He can edit some. All right. He'll have to edit that out, too. All right, the now one is a one par is 105, period. Then and now. There are no age adjustments involved. 105 is a now one is a one. In January, a $32,000 three-year-old par is about 100. So the three-year-old trying to move out of a winning effort at 32,000 into a now one is a one is making about a five-level rise. I mean, it's big, and not many of them do it. Conversely, the horses that are kind of running fair form in the allowance races, unable to win, clearly unable to get that win even after a few more starts, drops from a 105 into that $32,000 race, it's dropping from 105 to 100, which is about a five-level drop. Those horses win far more than their share of those races. Suspicious class drops still apply. If a horse is threatening to win this allowance race and drops into that race, beware of that. It's the same thing we've talked about before. At this time of year, this 100 for the three-year-old becomes a 102. The move is a little easier, but it's still very difficult. Later in the year, as the good horses have escaped the now-winners of ones, more and more of these horses, as three-year-olds, will come out of these three-year-old claiming races and win these allowance races because the good allowance horses are gone. But the figure for these, or the par, for these three-year-olds will also be going up at that time because they'll have matured more. Is that on tape now? Are we okay?
Yeah.
All right.
In our chart, we should be adding claiming races.
Those are claiming races.
For the adjustments.
Yeah,
because okay. You don't adjust if they're not a claiming race. Right. Those are all claiming races. Now, what we're going to do after lunch. Yeah, we should have a couple more. Yeah?
The implication here is that all of them being equal, a three-year-old is moving from sprint to root, equivalent of a drop. Is that what this is? No.
If a three-year-old's moving from a sprint to a rote, it's not a drop unless he's dropping in class. The par changes a little in the rote. See, okay, I
got what you're saying now.
The par will change a little. Do you know why it will change? Because the three-year-old will finish a little closer in the sprint than a lot of them will in the route. See, that's why the speed rating. Have you noticed the speed ratings in sprints versus routes? They're about 4 points faster. It's because more horses finish closer to the track record in sprints because they're not. The further they get away from the, in terms of distance, the slower the track record. The more the speed rating will change. See, if you run 4 furlong races exclusively, they're going to run closer to the track record than they will in mile races. Okay, and mile and a sixteenth, mile and a quarter. And so the uniformly the speed ratings will be higher in those shorter races. There is no class, just because a horse moves from a sprinter route is no issue.
Well, I have when I'm using the figures. I come up with sprint figures for a three-year-old and say if I have a 104, the amount now moves to a route, the 104 is going to look very good because the par for the route is less than 104. And it ends up being misleading.
Yeah.
Yeah, to remember to say that, wait, this par and sprint for three-year-olds don't mean anything.
Okay,
The sprinter route, basically what this comes to is a sprinter route. And the answer you still have to add, whether you deal with sprints, routes, back and forth, however, you have to evaluate whether or not a sprinter can route. And that has nothing to do with these numbers. You've got a thing called meridian energy or percent early, right? You can get an indication as to whether or not a sprinter wants to route by looking at that. Now, the figure might be artificially high. That's the reason you really should be using route figures with routers and sprint figures with sprinters. Now, you don't have the problem taking a router back to a sprint because you don't want to be doing that. You want to be using the interior fractions for that. So you just have to evaluate whether the sprinter will route or not. Surprisingly, if you use these numbers for a little while, you'll find that problem kind of goes away. It isn't a major issue. It hasn't been for me. But again, you're not wanting to handicap from those numbers. You're making a variance, and you're getting a feel for how well the horse ran at a given level. And if it ran very well against sprinters, and it looks like it can route, it'll probably run very well against routers. Okay. Let's. Question seven, is that the next one? The three-year-old wins a $40,000 claiming race. Well, I think I just answered that, didn't I? That was the reason for that. Yeah, it's just not as big a jump, but it certainly is a jump, right? Okay, so the horse is up against it. A runner moves from a maiden 50 to a maiden 32. We talked about that earlier today. You should have gotten that one. What is it? Down two. It's a significant drop here. An older horse moves from a competitive effort at 50 to a non-winner's one allowance race. Evaluate the class change. It's a significant drop, isn't it? Facing easier competition. Consider the kind of horses you get in a $50,000 claiming race, especially for older horses. $50,000 claiming race. Those are generally horses that have won non-winners ones, non-winners twos maybe, and then because their ability isn't quite enough, they face non-winners of three, maybe try a stakes race and find that they've just kind of run to the end of their rope. They're not good enough to stay unprotected anymore. So now they move into $50,000 claiming race. Occasionally you'll find a horse in there that didn't go through its conditions, that for whatever reason the horse went up through the claiming ranks, met $50,000 horses, performed pretty well against them, but still has its conditions left. In other words, it's still eligible for non-winners ones, non-winners twos. So it goes from a context in which it had to face horses that had already done all those things to horses that are basically not capable of doing them now. It's an advantage, strong advantage to that horse. And you see that probably once every couple of weeks. You see that kind of a situation. More late in the year, that's right. And the reason more late in the year is because some of these three-year-olds that have been competing in these claiming races and aren't able to make that jump we were talking about, as the year goes along, they mature somewhat, get better, and all of a sudden find themselves competing at $50,000, maybe against older horses, and were never even risked. I mean, never even put into those non-winners races because they weren't able to do them earlier in the year. And that kind of a horse has a major advantage. Non-winners one race carded for three-year-olds and older. Do you prefer the three-year-old or the older? Yeah.
Because most of the three-year-olds have already run through their conditions.
Yeah, but
those four-year-olds are almost five-year-olds, and now they really don't belong there. Stay with that one. All right. The younger horse just has the advantage. Okay. Now, occasionally you get an older horse that hasn't had a chance to run, and then you have to evaluate that. Okay. But generally, you give the advantage to the younger horse. Now, what we're going to do, as soon as we come back from lunch, write these down. Hollywood, 45-1, 110-3. Golden Gate Fields, 44-4, 110-1. Santa Anita, that's the one we're going to plug in. These are the $10,000 pars at these two racetracks. We're going to determine the Santa Anita $10,000 par because our handicapping in the third session will be based on being able to apply these track-to-track adjustments and the daily racing form variant, which will be the subject after we determine this par. We're going to determine the Santa Anita par for 10. We're going to determine the approximate daily racing form variant that these pars were earned under. And then we're going to talk about how to apply the daily racing form variant to our own figures. So that's what we'll do after lunch. The part-time chart, I hope you realize the value in understanding the pars at the racetrack, especially because I know not everybody is a conservative player. A lot of you are probably like to make prime bets, and what you when you make that kind of a bet, you want to be on solid ground, and a part-time chart helps you at least feel that you're on solid ground. You're not always there if you make any mistakes in the process, but nevertheless, it's great confidence builder if you know that you've got a horse that can run 106 and you're dealing with a par race of 103. I mean, you know you have a significant advantage, and that's the time to unwrap the bankroll. What we're going to do now is we're going to develop the $10,000 par. I put two pars on the board before we left, the one for Golden Gate and one for Hollywood Park. Now, we're going to develop the procedure for determining the $10,000 pars. The part-time chart that we have for Santa Anita is outdated because that track is different this year. So what we're going to do is we're going to develop the sprint par for Hollywood Park, draw some conclusions about that. Once we have it, we'll have the inter-track adjustments between Santa Anita, Hollywood Park, and Golden Gate Fields. When it comes to handicapping next week, we'll want to be able to apply everything we've learned, including the track-to-tracks, And at the conclusion of developing the track-to-track, we're also then going to apply the daily racing form variant. Now, there are a lot of things wrong with that variant. You hear a lot of complaints about it. But as far as an incremental pace analysis methodology, like you're looking at here, when you compound your fractions into pace ratings, it tends to absorb some of the minor errors you normally associate with the daily racing form variant. So we're going to figure out a way to do that. For those of you that are using NiVariant, you still need a way of handling shippers from Northern California, because I don't do variants up there any longer. So this is the way you'll handle shippers from Northern California as well. So now, where's the database for developing the $10,000 par? Traditionally, this has been done by getting all of the charts for all of the races for the last year or so, going through all of them at the different class levels, recording the races that have been run, and then drawing the conclusions from that. That's the hard way to do it. Because the skeleton par chart, 100, 101, 102, 103, 104, 105, and on up the line, is applicable across the country, you really only need one par to fill in that initial blank, the 100, for example. Then you can build the rest of the par time for that if you want to go that far. But by finding the 100, at least you'll be able to interchange Hollywood with Golden Gate and with Santa Anita. So where's the data? Friday's racing form. Rather than go through charts, the quickest way to get at this is to take a claiming race at about 10, 12, 5, 16, and look at the past performances of some of these horses. Take a look, for example, at Pop's Ruling, which is on page 6 Friday. Pop's Ruling, in the period of December 30th to March 22nd, competed in six furlong races at about the 10, 12, 5 level. We will use all of those races in developing the $10,000 par. When we've done that, we'll have six races in a database that we'll add to by going to some of these other horses and finding other 10 and 12, 5 type races and even 16s. When we have all of those logged, we'll wind up with about 10 from this exercise. My own data had like 18, so I'll kind of modify our conclusions by a little. But once you have all of that, you'll average the class levels, because say four or five of them will be a 10, maybe you'll have a couple at 12.5, a couple at 16, and you'll average them out, and you'll find that you might have the 12.5 par when you're finished. If you have the 12.5 par, how do you get the 10? You work backwards by one, don't you? You start with a 101, you work back to 100. Same way you would work from 100 to a 101 in building a part-time chart. So let's do this exercise together. Create a sheet of paper like we've got up here with five columns. Date, and the reason we're going to record the date of each line is so that we don't start duplicating lines as we go to other horses. Second call, final, class, and DRF is daily racing form variant. So create the five columns. Now what we'll do is we'll make the first couple of entries together. We'll take a couple of minutes while you record the other four races in that sequence, and then we'll move on to another horse. So we'll start chronologically. We start with December 30th at Santa Anita, the line down 6 furlongs at Santa Anita. The second call time of that race is 44.8. It's 44.4, but the part-time chart is in tenths at the half mile. 44.8, 111 flat. The class level's 12.5. The daily racing form variant was 8. That was at a period before that track was slowed so much. That was a bad race. January 11th now, the next entry. 44.8, 110.3. $10,000. Racing form variant 16. Third entry. February 22nd, 45 flat, 110.3, 10,000, 23 daily racing form variant. March 2nd, let me just finish these together. 45.4, 111.4, 12.5, 24. March 9, 45.4, 110.4, 10,000, 14. March 22nd, 45, 110.4, 10,000, 21. Now we have six races that we can start from. Now take a look at Forum Jack. On April 4th, he's in a $10,000 claiming race. So the next entry is April 4, 44.6, 110.1, 10,000, 15 daily racing program. Here's another one for you. Go Steady Lad. Second race back, April 11th. 44.4, 110.1, 16,000, 20 daily racing from there. Bubba's Bullet, January 11th. It's not the same January 11th. It's a different race that day. Double Song won one of them, Jetting Home won the other. 45.2, 110.1, 12.5, daily racing form variant 16. MacArthur Face, 20th of April, 45, 110, 12.5, daily racing form variant 20. Now, just to give you, we're going to keep it right here. This is 10, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, in yesterday's class, I also opened up to Saturday's first race, second race, and we found one or two more, just to give an idea that the database isn't necessarily limited to this form. I opened to Saturday's second race. It was a $10,000 claiming race. We added two or three more to this. That's the procedure. Now, mine happened to be like 18 races or so. I mean, it's a fairly extensive base. Now, what we do from here is that we determine first of all, we'll throw out the extreme highs or lows. There is one extreme low, and that's the 8. So you dump that. That's ridiculous. You don't want to figure that into these others. The first one, the daily racing form variant 8, which is the very first entry. All right? So you'll not use that in your daily racing form comparisons. But I got to tell you what you would do. You'd go ahead and keep this race because the race isn't out of line, just the daily racing form variant. And what can happen, what often does happen, the way they compute the daily racing form, it's very possible that there were only two sprints that day, or maybe there were three. Maybe one's a non-winner's three. One of them might have been the Palo Verde Handicap or the Malibu, and the daily racing form variant goes way down on that day because the race isn't out of line with any of the others. So keep the race in your database, but throw out the 8. Don't average it. Now average all of these, 16, 23, 24, 14, 21, 15, 20, 16, and 20. Don't do it. That's the procedure. The average comes to a little over 18, so make it 18. So you average those. Now, when you're finished, you will have a par, and that par will be based on having run on a daily racing form variant of 18. And I'll show you how to apply that in using the daily racing form variants for the other tracks. Now, whatever par we have will be based on the daily racing form variant of 18. Now, the par time chart that you see in that on the flip side of the Hollywood pars was based on 14. So this track has changed a bit. Second call, if you average the second call through here, we got a little over 45 yesterday. What I want you to put down for purposes of next times handicapping is 45 and 1. Because my database is about 9 races more than this, and I want you to use accurate data because you can use this beyond this class. 45.2. 45 and 1/5. 45.2. write down 0.2 up there so we know we're intense on this one. Okay. The final time here came to just under 111. Use 111. Now the class average came to about $11,000. Use 10. This will be higher because we used the 16 that we didn't use before. So use 10. That's what I want. That was the data I wound up with on mine. That's the way you would wind up with. That's exactly the procedure you'd go through to determine the $10,000 part at any given racetrack. Now consider if this had been, if we'd have had a few more 16s in here, when we average the class, we might wind up with a 12.5 par. Well, then to go from a 12.5 par to a 10 par, you just take this 111 and make it 111.1, right? You just change the 101 value to a 100 value, which is the one you're looking for. Does everybody follow this? Yes.
Yourself to $10,000 risk.
You won't get enough.
And you won't get enough in a hurried period of time. Consider the one-third point of a meeting, right? You don't have all that many $10,000 races at that point. Well, you want to revise your pars at that point, possibly. Or at least you want to check what you're using for par. Well, if you limit yourself to $10,000 races, you may find that you don't have enough of them to go around. And the more you add here, the more precise your number becomes when you're finished. Yes, Bob?
Why, you're just using three class brackets there.
Well, yeah, because you don't want to put 20s in with 10s. Say, I mean, the basic bracket we're looking at is 12.5 one side and the other. We can't say 10s and 8s because the 8s aren't here. So that's the reason why we're looking at 10, 12, 5, and 16. Quite often you wind up with a 12, 5 par. Well, the way to get back to a 10 is by going down. Now at Bay Meadows, I'd probably combine 8, 10s, and 12, 5s, and that way I'm in the center with that par. Either way, it works. Right? The surprising thing is it's a lot easier than going over all the charts for 2 years trying to determine this crap when you could have done it like this, right, by just buying a racing form. The procedure's simple, and this is the way it works. Okay. We'll see this for the first time in print in December. But I used to go through the other until all of a sudden one day it just hit me to do it this way. Okay.
They're really close now.
Oh, they're always close. They're always right on. I mean, you could go through the entire process, wind up the same par that we just wound up with. Now, we didn't wind up quite, we didn't have quite enough. We needed a couple of more racing forms to get this thing out to about 18, which is where I had it. But we'd have been one length off. Not a tragedy, would it? Okay. Back to the numbers that I gave you prior. Yes, Jim.
Let's say we just do that much for Golden Gate, for example. Now, you just said that a Golden Gate $10,000 horse is not the same as a San Anita $10,000 horse.
Right.
So how do you get that difference?
Guess what? That's where we're going now. Okay. See, I hired him to do this. Howard, refund his money. Where's Howard? The two numbers that I gave you prior to going on break. I gave you the Golden Gate, $10,000 par. I gave you the Hollywood, $10,000 par. Now, on that same sheet of paper, enter this data because I'm about to erase it. Unless I can get Vanna White to come up here and do it for me. You're not, huh, Jay? Okay. Have you got this data? The $10,000 par is 45.2, 111, 110, and 18. Did I? Uh-oh, it's too late. thank you very much. Don't release that bomb.
The par for Santa Anita is 45.2. Now, you gave us other pars, 45.1. Was that 150?
No, we're going to that right now, too. That's the next step.
Because that was, you guys are just one step ahead here. I gave you fifths. Since when, yes, catch up. Thank you, Joni. Thank you. I have a dunce cap. We're going to put you over in a corner. Since we're not building a complete part-time chart here, there's no reason to deal in tenths. What we're going to try to do now is just equalize one track to the other. Our computers, any numbers you're dealing with here, in this group anyway, are in fifths. Your racing form numbers. Now, there are a couple of people keeping their career and pace and speed numbers. Well, then you just convert to tenths. But the numbers I gave you prior to break are in fifths. So that makes this 45 and 1, 111, right? Now, let's put these back up on the board and take a look at